Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, the truth about the efficacy and safety of vaccines, specifically the human papillomavirus vaccines, including Gardasil and Cervarix. Joining us today will be scientists only. I believe that it's very important that we hear from people who are not affiliated with the vaccine industry, through research grants, through university affiliations, through front groups or foundations, but rather are doing what independent scientists are supposed to do. Look for the truth, irrespective of how it benefits them or challenges them financially. Today, our panelists include from Vancouver, British Columbia, Dr. Lucia Tomjanovic. Dr. Tomjanovic has a career as a postdoctoral fellow. She received her PhD in biochemistry. She's a specialist in neurodynamics and has been at the University of British Columbia to work on very important research with renowned neuroscientist Professor Christopher Shaw. Her research is focused on the neurotoxic properties of the human papillomavirus vaccines and aluminum vaccine adjuvants. Recently, she was a visiting researcher at the University of Tel Aviv in Israel and to discover the human papillomavirus vaccine mechanisms leading to autoimmune disorders. She's also an associate editor of the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. She and her colleagues are among the few courageous university researchers undertaking independent and honest experiments into the causation of adverse vaccine effects. She will be also highlighting some brand new information exclusively that you have not heard before about the human the papillomavirus vaccine and aluminum adjuvants. Gardasil contains aluminum hydroxyphosphate sulfate adjuvant. The big news is her recent research that is now out for peer review publication, showing the Gardasil viral antigen cross-reacting with the brain protein leading to the autoimmune disorders. Now, why is this important? Because right now we have the largest epidemic of autoimmune diseases in young people in our country's history. We did not have this in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. It began when we began using more of the vaccines. We'll discuss that. Also today, from Southern California, Dr. Mark Flannery. Dr. Flannery is a fellow of the American Association of Integrative Medicine. He specializes in functional medicine under the guidance of the pioneer functional medicine scientist, Dadis Karazsin, and he became internationally renowned for his work treating individuals with Hashimoto hypothyroidism. And more recently, he has been observing the serious side effects of the human papillomavirus vaccines in young adults and has been investigating those of vaccine injuries. And he has degrees from University of Southern California and Rochester Institute of Technology and other areas as well. His website is drflannery.com. They will be joined by Dr. Ken Stoller from Brisbane, California. Dr. Ken Stoller is a board-certified pediatrician as well as an environmental activist. He is a founder and president of the International Hyperbaric Medical Association, a diplomat of the American Board of Pediatrics, and a founder of the Humane Farming Association. And he is very serious about what he sees as the roles the vaccines are playing, particularly with those containing mercury, and the rise of autism and other related conditions. In 2006, he met with environmental scientists at the CDC headquarters to discover their concern about mercury, but being powerless to affect the agency's policies. His letter of resignation to the American Pediatric Association, published in a distinguished peer-reviewed medical journal, raised quite a storm in the pediatric community. And we'll talk with him. If time permits, we will take you by Skype to Denmark, where standing by is Dr. Stig Gerdes. He is one of the most respected physicians in the country, having practiced for more than 35 years as a licensed board-certified general practitioner. Also, he is witnessing a substantial increase in vaccine injuries among girls receiving the human papillomavirus Gardasil and the MMR vaccine, and he has been treating a number of girls who have human papillomavirus vaccine injuries. But again, that is if time permits. I'd like to welcome all of you to our program. And the reason that we are doing this program is because there is now a full-fledged assault in the entire American media. All the major medical organizations, all the major governmental health agencies, the CDC, the FDA, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, under the umbrella, the Health and Human Service agencies, are all pro-vaccine. They see no problems with vaccines, and they refuse to accept that there is a widespread concern about vaccines causing problems. They also deny there's any relationship between the Gardasil vaccine and many of the deaths and injuries that are occurring in tens of thousands of girls that have been fully documented. Also, unfortunately, but it is true, that the corporate left, from MSNBC and Rachel Maddow, and on HBO with Mr. Maher, on Mother Jones, and all the websites, including also, the Nation magazine. They are pro-vaccine, which is fine, providing that you bring science to your argument. I have not seen science. I have seen condemnation of parents who have taken the time and effort to question the safety and efficacy of vaccines, both individual vaccines and the collective amount that children are receiving. We now have hundreds of physicians and scientists, nurses, joining millions of parents in looking carefully at the safety and efficacy of vaccines. As a result, millions are choosing not to vaccinate, not on religious or philosophical grounds, based upon just pure public health science. They see that the government has hidden the truth, conspired and lied. We have people from the CDC, who was responsible for overseeing vaccinations to see if there was a data to see if there was an association between vaccines and autism in African-American boys. He has come forward and on the record stated that he was pressured by supervisors to change the outcomes. Let me remind the audience and the lawyers in this audience, that is a felony. Let us mince no words. These are criminal actions. Now, because he is a whistleblower, because he has given over almost 100,000 documents about nefarious deeds, cover-ups, and other crimes, misdemeanors at the CDC by all level of management and complicit by scientists who were on these studies but chose not to come forward and tell us, all of them are culpable. In fact, if there is a class action lawsuit, which I hope there will be, there will certainly be enough interest shown on the CDC to possibly close the damn place. In any case, we want to share the evidence of how dangerous one single vaccine is, and that is the human papillomavirus vaccine. We're going to start our program today with Dr. Ken Stoller. Ken, you had the courage, unlike a lot of pediatricians, to officially resign and state your reason for resigning from the American Pediatric Association. Tell us, as a scientist, as a physician, as a pediatrician, the first line of giving the vaccines to children are pediatricians. What is your opposition to vaccines in general, and what is your opposition to Gardasil or Cervarix specifically?
Thanks for having me on, Gary. I was a board-certified pediatrician for over 2 decades and a member of the American, or a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I resigned because of the American Academy of Pediatrics coming out so strongly in favor of the preservative thimerosal. They had issued a statement in 1999 with the Public Health Service that said, hey, this needs to come out of vaccines. We're going to get this out of vaccines as soon as possible. They said it was precautionary, but they knew the data coming out of the Centers for Disease Control showed a direct link to autism and other learning disabilities, and they did this as a preemptive move. Now, subsequently, in the year 2000, the CDC held a secret meeting at Simpsonwood and decided they were just going to cover up the data, and they diluted it over and over and over again until there was no statistical significance. And of course, that got published eventually, saying, "See, everything's okay." But of course, the CDC whistleblower that you're talking about, which is really what's behind the measles epidemic, quote unquote, panic right now, he's going to be coming forward and blowing the lid off of all of this. So that's why you see this panic to have draconian measures to remove parental rights all over the country, because they know what's coming down the track. So, you know, back to the American Academy of Pediatrics, they totally backpedaled on their pledge to have thimerosal removed from vaccines, and because, you know, the CDC was just covering everything up and there was no urgency to do that, and they could continue to follow the dictates of pharma and their controlled federal agency, the CDC.
I appreciate those insights. What can you tell us specifically about your concern for what we're told would be a vaccine that would help prevent cervical cancer deaths at some possible future point, maybe 40 years down the road, based upon taking the series of three Gardasil vaccines that millions of young girls have taken? What are your concerns, and what is the science that allows you to have those concerns?
Well, the first and foremost, there has never been a direct link between human papillomavirus and cervical cancer. So the idea that this vaccine can somehow affect cervical cancer rates is total, it's total lunacy. And I say that, that was the politically correct word to use. I could be much stronger, but we're on the radio. So we have a postulate, a hypothesis that human papillomavirus might cause cervical cancer, and because, I mean, if you look at it, why would getting an infection in childhood give somebody cancer 50 years later? I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's not a very strong piece of evidence to go on that the virus itself is the cause of the cancer. And it may be a cofactor, I'm not denying that. But I don't think the human papillomavirus may be the cause of cervical cancer. So you are subjecting people unnecessarily to something that's unavoidably unsafe, as the Supreme Court likes to say about vaccines, and to test a hypothesis. So this is an experiment that's cost many girls and women their lives, their fertility, and their mental abilities. I mean, it has crippled some people for a disease that is really a nutritional illness. If there was really a concern that the powers that be wanted to protect women from cervical cancer, they would make sure their vitamin D levels were adequate, because it's virtually impossible to get cervical cancer if your vitamin D levels are adequate. They would promote using indole-3-carbinol, which is something that's found in cruciferous vegetables. That reverses cervical dysplasia, and there has always been a good drug, at least a drug that's been around for several decades, available everywhere but in the United States, called isoprenosine, that is very effective. It's an immune modulator at wiping HPV virus out of the human body. So there's always been alternatives, much safer alternatives, for a nutritional illness, and there was never a need for this vaccine, which has turned out to be extremely dangerous.
Thank you. Hold your thoughts, please. Let's go over now and say hello to Dr. Lucia. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for having me.
Let us take this step by step. I want you to go to the most recent research on the human papilloma vaccine that you completed in Israel, which has been submitted to medical journals for publication. However, before we go to that, Dr. Christopher Shaw and yourself conducted earlier investigations into the brain tissue samples of two New Zealand girls who died shortly after receiving Gardasil. So first, begin by briefly summarizing your first investigation. What did you discover in the tissue samples? And then share with us your new research that further strengthens the case that the viral antigen in the vaccines was the cause of death, and that it is contributing to the thousands, tens of thousands of adverse effects in girls receiving Gardasil.
Yes, well, we initially published two cases, and that was a girl from New Zealand and one from Ontario, Canada. But in the meantime, we were able to obtain tissue samples from another girl from New Mexico and also a control sample of that was age-matched individual who died in a car crash and was not vaccinated with the HPV vaccine. And what we found was quite striking is that the three cases that were vaccinated showed a similar histopathological changes. And in particular, there was infiltration of immune cells and particular lymphocytes around the blood vessels, and also infiltration of macrophages around the blood vessels that stain positive for the HPV-16 antigen. And that was quite of a concern, which is, how could the HPV injected on the periphery end up in the brain? But we know from the research of our colleagues in France that the aluminum adjuvant injected in the periphery can actually migrate in the brain and the central nervous system. These experiments were done in mice, and they demonstrated that if you inject alum in mice in exposures which are relevant to human vaccine exposure, a proportion of these alum particles travels in the brain where it can be retained up to a year after injection. So basically what it shows is that these mice can accumulate the alum adjuvant in the brain. And the transport of alum particles is dependent on certain chemokines, and it also goes via lymph nodes, because if you remove the lymph nodes from the mice, then you don't get the transport of alum in the brain. Well, we know that the vaccine antigen in the vaccine is actually absorbed onto alum adjuvant, so it's in a complex, because that the adjuvant enhances the immunogenicity of the antigen. So it was reasonable to assume that if alum can be carried within macrophages, so can the antigen in the vaccine. So that was one finding. Again, the HPV-positive macrophage-like cells within the brain of these girls. The other finding was that we noticed that the antibody that recognizes the HPV also was binding to certain structures in the brain, which indicates that the antibody is cross-reactive. It doesn't just recognize the HPV antigen, but it also recognizes self-tissue. And so to demonstrate that, we did animal experiments, and this was the work conducted in Israel. And it's part of a larger experiment, but just concerning these findings, basically, if you vaccinate mice with Gardasil, they will develop anti-Gardasil antibodies, just like humans. or anti-HPV antibodies. So what we have done is we use a plate that we coated with HPV proteins, and then we applied the sera from mice that were vaccinated with Gardasil, and we were able to observe binding as we expected, because the anti-HPV from the sera, the anti-HPV antibody bound to the HPV antigen that was attached to the plate. Now, when we applied or co-applied the brain protein extract from these mice on the same plate, there was an inhibition of binding of the anti-HPV antibody to the HPV antigen, which means that the antibody against HPV was now preferentially binding to the protein extract of the mice. And the inhibition was dose dependent. So the more you increase the concentration of the protein extract, the greater the inhibition was of the anti-HPV antibody to the HPV antigen. And again, that's quite a solid proof that explains these autoimmune phenomenon that we see from Gardasil, which is that no matter which country you go where the vaccine has been widely implemented, by far the most common disorders you see are the disorders of immune origin affecting the nervous system. The other thing we saw in these mice was some behavioral changes. Particularly, there was increased depression and also mild cognitive deficits in the mice immunized with Gardasil compared to those that just received the placebo. And in our case, it was not aluminum; it was a proper placebo. We also had the aluminum group, and the aluminum group exhibited similar behavioral changes as the Gardasil group that were not seen in the placebo group.
One more follow-up with that. Another important area of your research is the use of aluminum compounds as vaccine adjuvants. Gardasil contains an aluminum compound also. And right now, children are exposed to much higher levels of aluminum vaccine adjuvants than adults, and this goes beyond the safety levels allowed. Also, all of the industry and the CDC studies used to support the safety of aluminum adjuvants suffer from poor design and protocols. So we can't believe what the federal health agencies and the pro-vaccine establishment tells us. It is well known that aluminum is a neurological toxin, yet we're injecting this into babies and children. So when aluminum is administered by injection, how does it differ from by eating something with aluminum? And what has been some of the major research supporting the claims of aluminogens contributing to vaccine injuries? And what has your research shown?
Well, the problem with the adjuvant is that it's not easily excreted. Now, the CDC will tell you that's not the case, that, you know, you just excrete aluminum as you do creatine. But that's simply not true, and the reason I'm mentioning creatine is because there was a study in 2011 published that actually modeled excretion of aluminum based on the clearance rate of creatine, which is a very small molecule and it's rapidly excreted. And we know now from, again, the research from France, that aluminum actually persists in the body, and if it was so quickly excreted, then it wouldn't be a very lousy adjuvant, because the whole purpose is that it remains in the body so that it stimulates the immune system. And the fact that most vaccine trials either compare as a placebo arm, they use a different vaccine, or the alum adjuvant, just shows that they really have no solid data to claim the safety of the adjuvant, whereas all the other research shows the opposite, because we have done numerous studies in mice where we used vaccine-relevant doses of aluminum, and we have seen neurological damage in these mice. There were inflammatory changes in the brain, increased microglia and astroglia, and also behavioral changes, and in one particular study, motor neuron loss. There are numerous properties of aluminum which make it really dangerous. And the one that's actually caught my attention of late is the pro-coagulant property of alum. And it's I think it's one of the aspects that's been neglected, but it explains a range of other adverse effects we see from vaccine, including hemorrhagic complications and strokes and pulmonary embolisms, and these are some of the common adverse reactions with Gardasil. But subdural hemorrhaging has also been implicated in sudden infant death syndrome. So the reason why aluminum has pro-coagulant properties and the vaccines containing aluminum is because aluminum decreases the zeta potential. And what is the zeta potential? Well, we know that most trace minerals and metals and also proteins and amino acids are held in suspension like dust particles in the air. And this is by the virtue of the negative charge that's on the surface of the particles. Now, if you decrease the negative surface, then the particles will start aggregating. And what can decrease a negative charge? A positive charge. And aluminum has a high positive charge because it's got a 3+ charge as opposed to iron can have 2+ and 3+. It's got this pro-coagulant properties, and what caught my attention was a study from 2000 that was entitled "Activation of the Coagulation System in Gulf War Illness: A Potential Pathophysiologic Link with Chronic Fatigue Syndrome." And chronic fatigue syndrome is again something we see increasingly reported with the Gardasil vaccine and also other vaccines that contain aluminum. So what the study on the Gulf War syndrome have found, they had 33 veterans that had confirmed hypercoagulability status compared to controls, and there was obviously a significant overlap in their symptoms with that of chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. And also, they all had activation of the clotting cascade with excess fibrin deposition in the circulatory system. And what they basically proposed is that what was culpable for this was the live virus vaccines plus the vaccine adjuvants and contaminants in the vaccine. And this is because if you have an excess of these vaccine antigens plus aluminum, what you're going to get is an excessive formation of immune complexes, and aluminum acting as a glue sticking it all together. And these immune complexes are also going to combine with body's own autoantibodies. And you're just going to have an excess forming of clots, and that can have again a range of complications. We all know that you don't want excessive thrombosis.
Okay, now I'd like you to answer this very shortly before we go to our next guest. But I need you to talk in lay language so we can understand you, for those who may not have a background in science. We are constantly told that vaccines are effective, that they protect against acquiring an infectious disease. If they were not shown to be effective to some degree, there would be absolutely no reason to use them. Now, we are told that when you get a flu vaccine, or a chickenpox, or measles, or any of the vaccines, you're creating protective antibodies. And historically, we were told that these would protect you for your whole life. Now we know that the only ones that protect you for your whole life is when you actually acquire chickenpox, the mumps, measles, then you're protected for life. And the vaccines don't protect you for life. We also have new science that shows that the fact that you may have no antibodies doesn't mean you're not protected. The fact that you may have lots of antibodies doesn't show that you're protected either. There seems to be no good science showing that the antibody that is caused by one or more vaccines will actually protect you, and for how long. Could you deal with that before we go to our next guest, please?
Well, yes, there was actually research, and I would have to dig it out, but I actually recently reviewed these cases where, again, it was demonstrated that the antibodies titers actually do not convey long-term immunity. And there are many reasons for that, because it's basically the humoral immune response plays an important role in overall protection, and the vaccines kind of bypass humoral immunity and stimulate only the adaptive immunity. But we see it in cases where you have 95% of vaccinated populations and still contract the disease. And there's been many publications of outbreaks of measles and mumps in population that were 99% vaccinated, but you never ever see these reports being cited on the mainstream media, because that's just the inconvenient truth that they don't want to deal with, because it just shatters the whole myth of herd immunity. And if if the vaccine truly did protect as claimed, then why would someone who is unvaccinated be a threat to a vaccinated child?
That's correct. If the vaccine is protecting you, you're protected. And if someone is not vaccinated, they're the ones who could get the disease. But now we're told, if you're fully vaccinated, you can't be around a person that's unvaccinated because you could get the disease. I do not know why this is not being challenged. And also, with the Gardasil vaccine in particular, there is no science whatsoever to show that this will protect a single child from cancer 30 or 40 years from now, because it can't be shown that the vaccine is anything other than an artificial mathematical model constructed by scientists to create and sell a vaccine. And I'm shocked that pediatricians and scientists, and especially those on the right — I don't expect the people on the left, I don't expect people on the right who are aligned with the vaccines to challenge it. But could you imagine today, for example, if The Nation magazine wanted to have an open, honest discussion on how to prevent war, and they invited only Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and George Bush and Dick Cheney? That would never happen. And yet that's exactly what Bill Maher and these other individuals did when it came to attacking. Not only did they not say, well, we've reviewed the science carefully — they haven't. And the only thing they're doing is using talking points in the pro-vaccine agenda. Does that surprise you as a scientist?
Well, it doesn't, because unfortunately it's not the integrity or pursuit of truth that motivates many those who work in science. It's money talks. And when you review all the studies that claim that vaccines are safe and effective, they're exclusively sponsored by the pharma, and yes, they have cunningly devised methodological schemes which makes it absolutely impossible to show that there is any damage, because again, if you use for example a placebo that on its own is can cause problems, then obviously it gives a misleading —
it's not a true placebo. It's not a sugar pill.
It's not a true placebo.
Using another vaccine as your placebo is fraud. Nothing less than fraud. So hold your thoughts. You've been listening just now from Vancouver, Canada, to Dr. Lucia Tomjankovic, and she is a research scientist and specializing in neurotoxic reactions with ingredients such as the neurotoxic properties of Gardasil and also the neurotoxic properties of the human papillomavirus vaccines and with the aluminum vaccine adjuvants. She's published in peer-reviewed literature. She's presented at scientific conferences. She's held teaching positions. So by any measure, with years of experience, she is someone that we can trust. And yet you do not see her in the mainstream media or on CNN or any of the other places. Let's now go over and invite our next panelist, Dr. Mark Flannery.
Thank you. I'm honored to be part of this panel today.
Thank you very much for being with us, Mark. Mark, we did a program a short while ago about the recent research that puts the entire theory that the human papillomavirus causes cervical cancer into question. That was research out of the University of California, Berkeley. Would you like to comment on that? And if it is true, doesn't that mean that the entire human papillomavirus vaccine is a large medical hoax? And then what else are we being told about Gardasil that is also erroneous? Take your time.
Sure. You know, when we look at vaccines in general, we see two different very approaches to why vaccines are good and why vaccines are harmful. And in me as a clinician, I'm not a researcher. I'm a clinician. I have people coming to me that have been injured by these vaccines, and I'm trying to help them. And so I don't come from a research perspective. I come from a clinical perspective. And if we look at the HPV vaccine, Gardasil cervix, kind of like Dr. Stoller had talked about early on, there is no evidence showing that these vaccines are actually protecting from cervical cancer. The average age of a woman who gets cervical cancer is 50 years old, and the average age of a woman who dies of cervical cancer is 55 years old. These vaccines are told that they are protective for 4 to 5 years. So the ages of women that are receiving these vaccines are from 9 to 26 years old. So the question is, even by kind of what the vaccine companies are promoting, it doesn't make sense in what they're doing, if it even works at all, and like they say. From my perspective, what I see going on is right along the lines of Dr. Lucia and Dr. Christopher Shaw and what they are doing. What I have seen in people coming to me is the autoimmune reactions that have taken place. I would say in almost 100% of the girls that I have treated, and boys that I have treated for vaccine reactions, we're finding neurologic antibodies. Antibodies to things like cerebellar antibodies or synapsin antibodies, alpha-beta tubulin antibodies, anglioganglioside antibodies, myelin basic protein antibodies. All these are neurologic tissues. And the immune system is attacking these tissues as well as other tissues in the body, which is where we come to that concept of cross-reactivity, of where we're putting something into the human body, and the structure, the protein structure of what we're putting into the human body through injection, which isn't the way we normally get exposed to antigens in this world. And we get exposed to these antigens by inhaling things, by things going through our digestive tract. We have what's called mucosal immunity. That is the first place our immune system becomes aware of something entering our body through the nasal passageways or our digestive tract, but not necessarily directly into the bloodstream, like we get with vaccines. So now we put these proteins into the human body, and they are so similar in structure to other proteins, neurologic tissues or thyroid tissues or other tissues in the body, and the immune system is now creating an immunological response against these VLPs, these viral-like particles that are injected from the Gardasil vaccine. But then it also goes and looks at human tissue and thinks that the human tissue is this same as this viral-like particle that it's supposed to be attacking. And now the tissues of the body become under attack as well. And that's where we see a lot of these girls. The majority of the girls that I've seen have these neurologic symptoms that are unexplained. They run through all the tests. They go to the top medical clinics around the United States. They run, see the top neurologists. They run MRIs and EEGs, and they look, and they can't find anything wrong that's going on. And it's because the immune system is attacking these tissues, causing dysfunction, but there are no tests that are designed to show that.
Okay. I want to step into this current controversy, Mark. The recent California measles outbreak has unleashed a wildfire, a pro-vaccine fanaticism. There are now bills in a couple of states, including, unfortunately, the corrupt New York State, to mandate the human papillomavirus vaccines. There are efforts in several states to remove all religious and philosophical vaccine exemptions. Parents of unvaccinated children are being demonized and labeled a threat to public health. If Joseph McCarthy were alive today, he would call the editors of The Nation magazine to give him support instead of Roy Cohen. That's how bad it is. That's how putrid it is. That's how biased it is. That's how unscientific it has become. There's even an op-ed article suggesting that all parents with unvaccinated children should have their addresses, personal information made public on the Internet. There are efforts to even start mandating adults to catch up on their vaccinations, and this has now reached the level of the federal government, not just simply at the state level. In the event that the pro-vaccine establishment, supported by ALEKS, the American Legislative Exchange Council, supported by millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in lobbying fees from Big Pharma, the same Big Pharma that has been killing thousands of people and getting away with it, Vioxx is one example, their vaccine divisions have been made untouchable. You cannot sue them. And so there's a win-win. So the more they panic people, the more that they get legislators who they can manipulate and buy to say pro-vaccine mandate for children, mandate Gardasil for boys and girls, there is no harm. Then one day we wake up and realize how crazy we have become. What do you foresee as the possible outcome of the state of health of the nation if it continues on this trajectory?
Yeah, this is a sad truth that's taking place.
And if anything I just said is inaccurate, hyperbole, or exaggeration, you have an opportunity to challenge me on it now.
No, I agree with you completely. You know, my children are unvaccinated. My children, my son, who's the older of the two, he's had one pediatrician visit in his life, and I was so discouraged by it that we never went back. And he's 9 at this point in time. And I would not subject my children to that, whether it's mandated or not, because of the dangers of it. And I see it every day in my office in treating the injuries from this. And if we have watched the injuries to vaccines increase and increase and increase over time as the vaccine schedules have increased and increased and increased over time. And there hasn't been any proof that these vaccines actually help and reduce the problem that we see with the infections. We look back to when polio vaccine was introduced, and we watched 2 years prior to that vaccine being produced that the incidences of polio were declining on their own prior to the vaccine release, and it continued to decline at the same rate after the vaccine was released. So a lot of people go back to that and say, but look what it did. Well, nobody ever looks at the statistics of what was going on just before that vaccine was released. And so we are going to have these outbreaks. It's just whether we're vaccinated or unvaccinated, if we look back over time, it's just events that happen in time where we have mass outbreaks, and then we have a time period of where we don't have those. And so whether we're vaccinating or not, we're going to see that. And we're going to, the medical community is going to use those times of outbreaks as a scare tactic to get other people to be on board with them.
All right. I'd like to hear your comments and views on the idea that any parent that challenges the vaccine safety and efficacy is considered a bad parent, irresponsible, and putting other vaccinated children's health at risk because their child is unvaccinated. Would you address that, please?
Yeah, I mean that's just wrong. I mean, it should be the opposite of that. Actually, is what we should do. I look at my daughter who, you know, there's a chickenpox outbreak at school, and she has to be removed from school because she's unvaccinated. And I'd rather have her be there and be exposed to it. But when we look at crossing over our personal rights in that way, it's just such a violation of personal rights to do something like that. But the medical world is just going to strong. There's just so much money behind it, so they just strong arm what they want to achieve their financial goals. HPV vaccine, it's the most profitable vaccine ever created. That's why it's so pushed so much by the pediatricians and other doctors.
Mark, I appreciate those insights. Hold your thoughts. Ken Stoller in Brisbane, California, board certified pediatrician, environmental activist. You had seen a lot of girls physically collapsing into a variety of serious health conditions after receiving the human papillomavirus vaccines. Tell us what observations you have about the health of girls and boys before and after the vaccines, because these aren't infants now. These are young girls, frequently athletic, in the top health, and we don't have just a few or a few hundred. We have a few hundred dead. But we have tens of thousands that have been hospitalized. Many are paralyzed for life. And I chose not to have them on the show today. There are so many who are out there, and their parents have, in effect, been told, your child's sickness had nothing to do with the vaccines. It's the pediatricians frequently telling them that. Talk about what it is to be a pediatrician, an ethical one, and then a cowardly one, and talk of what it is like to see a healthy girl become completely destroyed because of the human papillomavirus vaccines.
So I had a practice in New Mexico, and I'm in San Francisco now, really practicing as a integrative medicine physician. But what I saw in New Mexico, because I had a big hyperbaric oxygen facility there, was girls coming to me who have had adverse reactions to the Gardasil vaccine. And one of them was neurologically devastated. You might, you know, some might say she had like an NMDA receptor encephalitis or an anti-NMDA receptor encephalitis. Those were what her symptoms were. So she had persistent headaches. We had vomiting. We had seizure-like activity, severe cognitive deficits, raging emotional outbursts. That's what you see in anti-NMDA encephalitis. And it did respond to hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And I saw other girls that their symptoms were as mild as persistent headaches. And that also responded to hyperbaric oxygen therapy. But I don't think anyone can take this vaccine and get off scot-free. So you may not have your brain affected, but you could end up putting yourself into premenopause. It can do so many things to so many different organ systems, and it's tragic. Now I think, you know, in Japan they haven't banned it, but they have ceased recommending it. In Japan, and Japan, of course, has banned the MMR vaccine. So for some reason, the regulatory bodies in Japan are not as susceptible to money and threats by pharmaceutical companies in the United States as our scientists and physicians in the United States. And it's all about the money.
Hold your thoughts, Ken Stoller. It will be an abbreviated discussion. But I do want to bring on Dr. Stig Gerdes, G-E-R-D-E-S, from Denmark. Let's go to him.
For this part of our program, we're going to be talking with Dr. Stig Gerdes. He is a licensed general medical practitioner in Denmark who has been in practice for over 35 years. Now, although no vaccines are mandated in Denmark for school or otherwise, he has witnessed an increase in vaccine injuries among girls receiving the human papilloma Gardasil and the MMR vaccine, and is treating 14 girls with human papillomavirus vaccine injuries. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
In your medical practice, you have been witnessing a rise in injuries among young adult girls receiving the human papillomavirus vaccine. We know that Gardasil... We know that Gardasil, which includes seizure, strokes, chronic fatigue, hair loss, personality changes, tremors, paralysis, menstrual cycle changes, loss of vision, and cases of death. Now, among the cases you have witnessed and are currently treating, what have been the most common adverse symptoms?
Well, I think it has been the bad immune system, lot of infections, severe headache, stomach pain, very severe, nausea, and fainting. That's what you call POTS, and skin changes, and some fewer has had recurrent fever, swollen lymph nodes around the body, hypersensitivity, and different autoimmune sick diseases. Very, very heavy fatigue and no power anywhere.
How can you be certain that these have been caused by the Gardasil vaccine?
The way I put the diagnosis is that you have a complete healthy young girl. Up till she gets the vaccine, she had no record of any sickness or anything. And after the first, second, or third vaccine, she gets very ill, and she gets multiple symptoms. And that's where I put the diagnosis on. We don't have any blood test in Denmark to verify the diagnosis, but it is the same history. All the girls have been well up to the first Gardasil vaccination, and then they just crumble and get sick, very sick. In my practice, I've had 120 vaccinated, and three out of them has been severely ill, and the five had had cancer of the cervix after vaccination. So I don't see what it's used for, that vaccine. In Denmark, we have vaccinated approximately 500,000 people, which is about 10% of the Danish population of 5 million. And I think that about 16,000 has had side effects, and out of these is 5,000 very severe. That means they cannot go to school, where most of the time they're in bed, severe pains anywhere in the body. And only about 1,350 has been reported as a side effect to the authorities, which means that about 14,500 is in the dark, that people that don't know what hit them, they don't know that the what has spoiled their life is actually due to the vaccine, Gardasil vaccine. And I think it's a big problem to find these girls, because as a opponent to the vaccination, we are not in the press in Denmark, so we go on the media, Facebook and so forth, to spread the news and the knowledge of the diseases, and that takes time. I actually call it the vaccine roulette, because the medical firms and the health authorities, they are the winners, and the state and people are the losers. The state lose about $2 billion a year, I'd say, and the people that get sick, their life is actually spoiled for lots of years, and the family too, and it costs them about 100,000 Danish kroner a year, the family, and therefore it has been uphill to see what to do about this, and fortunately, some wise people had talked about intravenous vitamin C injection, which I'm giving these 14 girls, and it seems to have a very drastic effect on their symptoms.
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to end there. Thank you, Dr. Stig Curtis. We will have an extended interview on another program. 35 years in practice, and he's seeing an enormous amount of damage from the Gardasil vaccines. I also want to thank you, Dr. Mark Flannery from Southern California, Dr. Ken Stoller from Brisbane, California, and Dr. Lucia Tomjankovic from Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm Gary Knoll. This has been the Progressive Commentary Hour, looking at the safety and efficacy of the Gardasil vaccine. Thank you for listening.